This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/iFanboy.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
This is iFanboy Pick of the Week 725, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you. Hello, welcome to iFanboy Pick League episode 725. I am Connor Kilpatrick. This is my co-host, Josh Flanagan.
Well, hello there.
And joining us this week, former Marvel PR maven, current internet mogul at comicbook.com, Jim Viscardi.
Hello, internet mogul.
Ooh. His new book, From Maven to Mogul, 12 Recipes for Running the Internet. It's coming out soon.
I saw somebody use the word maven the other day, and it occurred to me, I was like, I don't know if I've ever used that correctly, because I don't know exactly what it means, but it was like, yeah.
It sounds good.
It does sound good. Like, it sounds like, I don't know, like it has an old-timey, like I picture like a 30s movie star.
Well, that's what I prefer to talk like, so that's, for me, it sounds good. I don't say I walk anywhere, I say I ankle places. So this is going to be the show now, talking about old-timey phrases. Because we are iFanboy, and normally we read our comics and talk about them, but nothing's normal now. There are hardly any comics, if any at all.
I'd like to thank the patrons for unlocking the complete diversion episodes.
Right, so we're going to just roll with whatever the world brings us going forward until things get back to normal, and who knows when that's going to be. So hopefully you come along for the ride. It's going to be weird.
But here's the thing. We are going to keep going. And I know that, like, last week, I think when we tweeted out the show, we said something like our last regular show, and I can see how that would have been misinterpreted. And so that's the last show, like, that sounds like the other ones we do. But if nothing else is clear, we don't know how to stop.
We made sure to say last regularly formatted show. It's just the nuance of it that people sometimes miss. So I
feel like you've done that a few times where you've tweeted something out and everyone has just been like, oh my God, the show is ending.
Because we could take this thing that we've done for our entire adult lives and just casually toss off as an afterthought that we were going to quit.
Yeah. Literally, we've done this with 3 financial crises. we're still going. Well, that's not true. We've done iFanboy with 3 financial crises. Anyway, this is boring. Let's talk about comics, because there were some this week. Here's a spoiler warning. There'll be some review shows for these comics, one of them which was 9 pages long. So exercise some caution.
Technically, there were 7 pages of content.
If you care. Josh, you had the pick of the week this week, and you got real lucky.
Yeah. So first of all, this could be it for comic stuff for a while, so I want you to suck this up, all right? We're going to do our best with it, there we are. Yeah, so I subscribed to Terry Moore's 5 years via Comixology, and I was very happy to see that it came out this week. And also, like, it's funny because if you think how long ago now, at least 10 years, maybe 20, there was a vibrant independent publisher scene, which does not exist in nearly the same way. Well, it does. It's just there's so many thousands of them now that nobody ever rises to the top necessarily or can survive in the direct market, to put that more clearly.
Well, I don't even think Terry survives in the direct market.
Exactly. And he is the best of them, is my point. You know, knew what he was doing, whatever. But, you know, like this week, you know, they did their thing. They put it on Comixology. They said, damn the torpedoes, do this.
Well, that's what's great about him. You know, he does everything, him and his wife, and this is 5 years number nine.
Yes.
And was that, you know, DC put out a bunch of their digital-only books, and that was really the only thing that came out that we were really, you know, in our wheelhouse. But then Josh is like, oh, 5 years came out. Because they're not restricted by whatever is restricting everybody else. So I was like, oh, thank God.
Yeah. And, you know, like the thing about it was he gets pick of the week sort of by default in a way. I mean, we read some other books. We read some other things that were actually kind of fun. I think we'll talk about those. But this really did have a comfort food feeling. This felt to me like reading an issue of Strangers in Paradise. It really, in the way that his other series that have been between Strangers and this sort of didn't, because he was doing a different thing. It was a different genre. And it always is going to feel like Terry Moore, you know, but this has those characters in it. And in fact, he had like sort of the, you know, the dreamy, because I'm at a loss for words, the more artsy fartsy segment at the beginning.
Well, you know? But also kind of too uncomfortably on the nose.
Yes.
About the incoming death. And I was like, I don't know. Come on, Terry. The room.
He couldn't have known. He'd already set this up.
Oh, I know. I was just reading this 2 pages of the meditation of this guy who's dying because he's been stabbed by, is it Zoe, that girl's name?
Yeah.
And I was just like, well, this is very well done. I understand what he's doing, but this is a bumming me out. So I'm glad it only lasted for 2 pages.
You're right. And the thing that actually reminds me the most about Strangers in Paradise, and it's not that Kachu and Francine are in this, it is, but one of the things that was really interesting about Strangers in Paradise that would made it stand out, really, is that he would get away from, it's so easy to describe that book as the relationship book or whatever, and it's people hanging up, but like, that shit got wacky. There was, you know, there was
espionage.
Violence and action and spies and killing and like all this stuff, and they would really, he would really, you know, take you way out there before bringing you in, and so this, none of this stuff, the supernatural, or I guess it's physics, however he's phrasing it. Stuff.
Well, there's both. There's people of like mythology in the book, so it's both. Yeah.
But still, like, the fact is, like, we've got a little girl in Russia killing a dude, and because I read that book for so long, I can roll with that as part of this book. Like, it kind of works, and you can still do the little cute thing where she gets, you know, a crush on the scientist that they find and have to break him out, and she's a complete trooper. I think the toughest and best scene in the book was, and I'm saying this, was the dream sequence that Kachu had about her and her family on the beach, you know, when it goes down.
Well, yeah, I mean, the whole story here is that, and Jim, I don't know if you read any of these books or anything.
No, well, that's the thing. The thing I was going to say was, like, Terry, to me, he does people so well that, like, you buy into these characters and everything that he just kind of puts onto the page, like, just kind of works. And even when it does get weird, you don't really, you know it's weird, but you don't think it's weird because you already, like, know, you feel like you know these characters so well and so much. So it's just all, like, yep, I'm
it's
here.
It's all grounded in their humanity. He's very good at bringing that out.
So we've talked about this book before, and I just want to make sure people, like, know what we're talking about. This is the culmination series of all of his previous works. So you've got the Strangers in Paradise characters, you've got the Echo characters, you've got the, what was the one before this, right before this, with the
Rachel Rising,
the
Gorilla.
Rachel Rising, and then the last one with the
Gorilla.
Marine. Yeah, that one.
Had the Gorilla. Motor Girl.
Motor Girl. So it's got all those characters together to team up because they found out that the Phi bomb, that's how you're saying it? Phi?
I would say so, yeah.
The Phi bomb is being developed by both the United States and Russia, and that this bomb, once unleashed, will cause all of the air in the planet to ignite into a firestorm and kill everyone. And so they're racing against time. They've got 5 years to stop it because they have They have Rachel. Is Rachel the one? See, I'm
Rachel is the yes, the first.
I'm holding on by my fingernails for the details of the characters and all that stuff.
Rachel,
in terms of
yes, no, I agree.
So the little character moments here, mm-hmm. I love, but the overall story, which there's like six blondes who all have the same nose, mm-hmm. like that stuff, I'm really holding on my fingernails as not being the expert, not having read all of Strangers in Paradise.
Yeah.
And sort of losing it a bit with the timeline of who these characters are in mythology. But the stuff with like Zoe and killing the guy and then breaking into the scientist's headquarters and then falling in love with the scientist because she's like 12 or whatever, and she gets a crush on the cute, you know, scientist. That I loved all that stuff, and that was great.
Yeah.
I thought this issue was terrific. I mean, it was, you know, it came out in a weird week, but like if you'd made the pick anyway in a normal week, I would have been totally understandable because, like, of course, the art's amazing and the character work is top-notch.
It's interesting because you're not wrong that many of the blonde lady characters look similar, but because of that, as
I mean, two are sisters, but the other ones all. Also right. Look like this.
And I think that then it like makes me focus on sort of what it is that he's doing differently. And I can see differences. And I think it's probably more obvious to him as an artist than us. And also I think black and white does not help necessarily in that instance, because at least if it was color, you would know like their shirts are a different color or something like that. But right. It's black and white. You know, I'm guessing if you took the color out of a lot of comics, it would look like this.
This is why they should all wear superhero costumes.
I mean, I think that that's a very good reason why superheroes became the preeminent, you know, force in the comic book medium, because it was so easy to tell the characters apart. That sort of iconography made it a lot easier. But what I was going to say, though, is that so I'm looking at this page on page 20 in your digital reader.
Where could you scroll with 20?
And you've got the one girl who's standing up on the phone, like her hair is different and her eyebrows are different, you know, than Kachu, who is disheveled and has bruises. And then you cut down to the bottom and you've got the tough one. And you're like, she is always designated by her.
Tambi?
Tambi. Yes, right. I just left my head. Tambi is designated by her, like her.
She's muscular, tall.
Yeah, her tall, sort of big Bobby the Marine body. Thank you. And like her eyebrows, like she's always, you know, so they're always sort of furrowed. You know, and just her posture. And also for some reason she has a Bluetooth earpiece because this is a fantasy world.
She's doing TV from home. So that was a joke from our show. Talk before the show. I do want to mention before we move on that he opens every issue with like a really intricate uninked pencil drawing. And those are all my favorite part of the issues because it's the pure art of it.
It's beautiful.
I just love looking. I just look at these. This is a 2-page spread of like, I guess, Moscow.
Yeah.
And it's like, how long did he take to do this? And he is a crazy person.
Also, I can tell that is cold, freezing Moscow just by looking at it. Like, I don't need a thing there. I think that's beautiful. I actually really like it that same way. I think some of my favorite panels in this are the outdoor overhead shots. Like he's drawing, you know, the snowy staircases and the overhead shot. I love that.
There's so much ink on the page.
Yeah, but it's not like blots of it. Like it's all, you know, he doesn't really like do blacks like say Chris Somni does them, where he's sort of painting with blacks. He's working on lines more.
He's not using blacks for texture or for depth or anything.
It's more like Stan Sakai in that way.
It's very much like Stan Sakai. It's almost like flat, but it really works. And I'm glad we have a high end black and white book that's still coming out from one of those, you know, legendary 80s and 90s.
And I like that it has enough, I'm trying to phrase this, lack of polish. It has a handmade quality to how I'm looking at the art and the pages, and I love that. So that's that. There's your we're going to have a pick of some kind. We're sticking with that. The show is the pick of the week. What that means? That's a good question.
Next week pick of the week is rum.
That will be that question will be answered, maybe at the last moment, but it will be. So there you go. That's a comic book pick of the week. We'll get back to it at some point.
So as I said earlier, we had three DC digital only books that came out. We're gonna drop an Archie book in there too, and one of them was Teen Titans Go to Camp #6. And the tough thing about these digital releases is that when they go to print, they're usually compiling like 6 issues of these digital books together. So this is more like a chapter. I was into this story and then all of a sudden it was over because it was 6 pages long. So this
and also
is not
those pages are half page.
Right.
They're just like squares.
Like, so what they usually do for these books is they cut the page in half and make them horizontal for your iPad. So you're really only getting like a quarter of a book. So that's just what we're dealing with here. So Teen Titans Go to Camp number 6. I haven't read this before. Josh, I know, is a big fan of the show, and his kids are. So I only read this issue, obviously.
I read through all. I actually had them all downloaded to read with the kids at some point, but I hadn't. So I read all of them. And to allay your fears, like every odd-numbered issue seems to be a lot longer than every even-numbered issue. So like those were more like, I think the first one was 30-something pages, and then one was 20, one was 18. But then the ones in the middle, there was a 7-page one.
You know. I'll just say this. I thought it was written by Sholly Fish.
Yeah, he writes all of them.
Art by Abigail Larson. What an unusual and interesting art style that they chose for this, and I really liked that.
Yeah.
I was shocked. I was expecting it to look like the cover, which is drawn to look like the cartoon, and then I get in, and it's this really weird indie art style almost, and I was like, wow, that's interesting.
This was the most extreme of them. The first chap, like, basically what you've got is they go to, they're going to go to camp, and then all of the letters home are the short ones, and they're done by other artists. They're getting little artsy parts. The ones, the bracketing sort of parts are done in the traditional style. This one is the most out there.
Are they in camp on Apocalypse?
Yes.
Because they're in camp with, like, Calibac and...
Yes, they're, yeah. The year, see, the year prior...
What is the insurance premium on that?
It's different for superheroes. So so the overall story is that they went to camp last year, and when they went, Robin was way, 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 way too competitive, and he ruined everything. And so they have to go to a different camp this year, and they go to Apocalypse. And these are the letters home.
It's called an overcorrection.
Yeah. Yeah. I do. I love the show. I think it's really funny. I think Sholly Fish does a very good job at sort of getting those character voices down, although it does lose something in the comic transition, you know, from moving.
Well, it always does. That's always a problem with licensed books.
But, you know, they're fun little bits, and you know, and when I can read them to the kids, I do the voices. It's a good time.
Hmm. Jim, did you read this one?
I did. And it was funny because, like I said, like, you know, my kids has gotten really into Teen Titans Go. I think the movie is what really got her into them. And so, I mean, I really enjoy the show. And so when I, you know, first opened this, I thought I haven't been reading this. And so when I picked it up, in the first, like, just two panels of the, you know, of the story is, you know, a Trigon minion, whatnot, just, you know, seemingly going about normal business. And then Trigon, like he is in the show, just being like, yeah, it's fine. I'm reading a letter from my daughter. And I was just like, okay, this is very much carries a lot of the same tone. I was not expecting the art to be like this at all. And it looks great. And to sort of have that kind of balance against the humor a bit with the show, you know, the group is, was fun.
Is Aqualad in the team?
The gag is that there's Teen Titans East. That team consists of, I don't remember all the characters, but Aqualad is in on that team, and Speedy. And,
oh, because Arsenal's there, yeah.
Yeah, no, he's Speedy in this, and the joke is that Robin is very competitive with Speedy, and he hates him, but Speedy's really good at everything. He's not an asshole about it, but, like, everything he does is better. And Robin can't stand it, and it's been the running gag for the whole thing. It's very funny because the idea that there's the Teen Titans, but then there's the Teen Titans East. They're just on the other side of town, and they're rivals. I love it.
It's like Friday Night Lights.
I love that it's just wacky silliness, and they can sort of go all over the place with it. And the characters are really consistent, and they're fun.
So from Archie Comics this week, they released, this was their sole digital release, and their sole digital release, I guess, for the foreseeable future, was Sabrina the Teenage Witch, number one, from Kelly Thompson and Veronica and Andy Fish, Jack Morelli as well. And so I don't know much about Sabrina, even though I've someone who's always read Archie Comics. I didn't really go delve into that side of the story. I don't watch the show on Netflix. I don't really read the Sabrina book. So I'm not really familiar with the characters all that much, other than when she, like, randomly appears, like, in the zombie Archie book, whose life, Afterlife with Archie, which sadly disappeared, never came back.
I loved that book too.
Such a great book. I mean, so this issue was interesting because it felt like to me anyway, that you needed to have some sort of baseline familiarity with the characters because it didn't really give you anything, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, but I found myself sort of wondering who everybody was. I like the art for the most part.
I think the art was hit or miss. I think for the most part, overall, I did really like it. I liked, again, we just mentioned this, there's a hand-drawn quality to it. I'm sure it's digital. But, you know, there's just sort of a looseness to it that I thought was really fun. But there were bits, and it tended to be with the, for some reason, the outdoor scenes with the boys that she was talking to. Like, the guy's faces, when the second boyfriend guy comes along, it just, I was like, that's not a good drawing. For whatever reason, like, it just seemed kind of... I don't know, looser than everything else or, you know, malformed. Other than a couple of pages, though, for the most part, I thought it was great. I thought the Sabrina, you know, all of her, the character model, she's greatly acted. I think it's really wonderful. It reminds me a little of the art style from Crowded. It's a little bit I really like the coloring and production of it, though, a lot. I thought that
was... Yeah, I think the coloring of this is really what got me, you know, kind of through most of it, because again, I'm kind of with Connor. I kind of didn't know what kind of to expect to come coming into this, and by the end of it, I still didn't know really what I was.
Yeah, I didn't really know the hook.
Yeah,
I didn't feel like that. Meaning just like I don't know anything about it. I don't even read any Archie comics, but basically, and just as a note, as we were just talking about this with 5 years, is that just by making her hair white, you always know who she is.
Because nobody. Oh, for sure. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's true.
But she's a superhero. That sounds fair.
You know, yeah. And, but, you know, I think the story is, you know, she's trying to do everything at once and she's burning the candle at both ends. And it's a magic candle. And, you know, she's got her mother's and there's her witch, you know,
aunts, I think. Whatever
they are. Yeah, you know. Yep. I mean, like, I was pretty straightforward.
No, that's all the story. I'm not saying the story was on. Yeah. I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying that at the end of it, I didn't really feel a compelling hook with the characters or the story itself. Like, I didn't know enough about them to... I guess I don't know enough about Sabrina to care about what happens to her. And that's not... I mean, that sounds overly harsh, but...
It just feels like a teen with a job story. And so that was all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was the fact. And then she has, you know, two boys who want to go out with her. And she's got family drama at home. Like, if you take out the magic, that's sort of the deal, I think.
Oh, for sure. And that's basically Archie Comics in a nutshell. You know? They even flipped gender script here on the love triangle. But, you know, if I was a Sabrina fan, I might feel differently. I just don't know enough about the character to really feel compelled to read more.
And that's I don't know if it's Man in the Desert thing or what.
Sure.
But I was like, I enjoyed it. Like, it was much better than I think I was expecting.
I didn't hate reading it because it was like a full-length comic story.
Sure. And also, you know... Kelly Thompson wrote it. She is not, you know,
she's good.
Yeah, she's skills. You know, it was well made. It was, and you know, at this point, really, like, a whole comic book. Spoil me.
Listen, in comparison to Genlock 14, it was like water in an oasis on a desert walk. So, and I don't fault this book. This is one of DC's digital releases in conjunction with Rooster Teeth, which is a production company and a distributor of content online.
And now also is headed by a now more famous Josh Flanagan. So that's fine.
Really?
Yeah, no, yeah. I was the top
Twitter nemesis, Josh Flanagan?
Yeah, I was the top Josh Flanagan on the internet for quite a while. And then one day I realized I wasn't. And it's the Josh Flanagan associated with Rooster Teeth, who him and I are Twitter friends. And he's a lovely person from what I can tell.
Well, you should tell everyone you became Twitter friends because people were constantly tweeting at him thinking you were him. He was you.
Yeah.
Yeah. They were constantly talking to him about comics. He's like, I don't know what you're talking about. And then you became friends because of that. So that's nice.
Suck it. No. He's still my
nemesis. That happened to me with the Connor Kilpatrick with two N's who lives in Brooklyn and writes about politics on Twitter. Back when I was on Twitter, he would constantly get tweets from people thinking he was me. And then I was getting tweets about his political stuff, which you can imagine were very dicey. And I was like, why are people yelling at me about trans rights? And then realized it was because he's C. Kilpatrick and I'm C.S. Kilpatrick. Anyway, back to Genlock.
There's no need to do that.
This was the final issue, and I will say this: it seems to be. I don't know anything about this. It seems to be about mecha kids fighting mecha robots. It was kind of like that really good book from Boom. What was that called? That we really liked. I'm so tired. the one that Ron and I really liked from Boom. Anyway, this seems to be like kids piloting mecha robots for one. This issue is mostly one giant mecha robot fight. But I did actually, without knowing a thing about the characters, there was one scene I really did like that I thought you could feel the impact from the context clues was after the fight that blonde girl is in the VR world and then the kid joins her and she says, I made the world for you because you don't ever know how to take a break and you're addicted to games. So this is a VR world with no game component. And for whatever reason, it really worked for me, that particular scene. Like, I got the emotion of it. I got, you know, the kid said, play my dad's mixtape. Well, he's sort of alone in the world. I thought that was nice. I didn't know what it all meant, but I thought it was a nice scene.
Yeah, I actually, the same thought. I thought that was a nice scene. The first part of it, the whole time, it seemed very standard. Mm-hmm. Like, I was like, they're not Transformers, but they look a lot like Transformers. And when I say a lot, those are Transformers. And like, that part of it, everything up until that scene was incredibly, like, by the book. Are these characters, what are these characters? Are these Rooster Teeth characters, or are these?
Yeah,
it's a television series.
It's a television series, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't know that.
What are these characters?
What is this? Why
is this? I assume this works well if you like the show. I don't know.
Did you know anything about this, Jim?
I did not. It looked it's one of those things where I feel like it was vaguely familiar, and then the more I read into it, I was like, no, this is definitely not a thing. But I appreciate kind of the aesthetic. Kind of like, I'm always a kind of a sucker for big robot.
There's people who love mecha.
Yeah, like I love
our old
that
host
stuff.
Paul. So you get him a mecha story, he's all in.
The variety of, you know, I guess this team, you know, with one that was basically a rabbit, which I thought was pretty cool. And there I was like, okay, no, I will. Part of it had me. I actually went back and read the chapter before this one just to see if I can get a bit more context. And I will probably end up going back to read the whole thing.
Oh, wow.
It's not very long, but two, it kind of feels like something that may be my jam. So I'm going to give it a
shot. There you go.
Success. Ta-da.
And I realize it's mech and not mecha. I just like saying mecha because it's more fun.
Yeah.
It's an extra syllable.
Same thing.
It's meta mecha.
So we still had a patron pick. Those are the books we wanted to talk about, and by wanted means those are the only books that came out. At patreon.com/ifanboy, you can vote to add a book to the rundown. Anyone can vote to do so, and because it was only five books or four books, we had a different way of voting this. We just threw a poll up and so a lot more of the people voted, which was nice. So the patron pick was Batman: The Adventures Continue #1, written by Paul Dini and Alan Burnett, the team from the animated series, and art by Ty Templeton, colors by Monica Kubina, and letters by Joshua Reed. And this is, again, an animated, a digital-first book, so it's sideways, but it's a little bit longer than the other ones. And this is interesting because it is the continuing adventures of the cartoon world, but correct me if I'm wrong, Jim, this is based on the toy line.
Yes, because if I remember the end of the show correctly, this does not pick up there.
So first of all, comic series based on toy lines, not unusual. We're going to talk about another one later in the show. There was, of course, famously Superpowers in the 80s that Jack Kirby drew for DC. Like, it's been a lot of...
Apocalypses.
Basically. So... I've been an avid collector of the Batman the Animated Series toy line. I have almost all the figures, but at Comic-Con this past year, the last Comic-Con we ever had, I was excited to see which new ones they had because they hadn't done all the characters yet, and all of a sudden I see Deathstroke, and I see Jason Todd Red Hood, and I see characters, and I see Azrael Batman characters never on the TV, on the show, and I got real
Batman
upset.
Batman Who Laughs, I think they introduced.
Oh, yeah, and I got real upset about that.
I'm sorry, we don't talk about him here.
So apparently this is based on those new figures, and as a matter of course, Jason Todd makes a shadowy appearance. Of course, he was never on the show, so it'll be interesting to see how they figure that out, because they went right from Dick Grayson to Tim Drake on the cartoon. So anyway,
they mentioned Tim in this, and so I'm like, okay, that's where I was like, is it kind of in continuity? And then I was like, oh no, it's definitely not.
So We have a t-shirt for this because it doesn't make sense. But
you know what's funny is like I had no idea there was a Batman animated series continuity. I just thought it was all episodic and there you go.
So I mean, basically yes, because yeah, whatever.
Right, okay. Because I read this and I'm just like, oh, it's just a Batman animated series story. Rad.
I mean, I'm just giving you the context of why this came about is it's based on these new characters from the toy line.
Mm-hmm. Which has been very successful for them. They have sold many toys
to people like Connor.
That's right.
Not children. Certainly not children.
The trick is to have them delivered to your office.
I wondered if this was older repurposed content as opposed to new stuff.
No.
And then I guess it's new.
It's definitely new.
This is supposedly all new. I say that in that, like, I don't know, maybe Paul and Alan wrote these years ago and they're just like, hey, you got a, because there used to be like an animated series, comic series.
There was several of them. They were really good.
I just figured this was just more of that they just dug up and.
It's got to be new because they're basing it on these toys, unless somehow they've written all those characters into a new book and they decided to make toys out of them. Anyway, and they somehow thought of Batman Who Laughs, which means we should hunt them down and destroy them. Anyway, putting all that aside, I liked this a lot. I always love when Batman goes up against Lex Luthor because they're very different but very similar people.
Animated series Superman and Batman Lex Luthor is maybe my favorite.
He is after Gene Hackman the best Lex Luthor ever seen.
Just the look on his face, the way they do his sort of droll expression and his eyebrows, like he's always like, yeah, I know.
Like I was enjoying it. It was fine. And then Lex Luthor showed up. I was like, oh, so that's when it got going for me. Up until then, it was fine. I mean, Ty Templeton is good at doing the style. You know, I'm old, so I miss Mike Parabek, who did the original books before he unfortunately passed away too early. But he just had a spark to him that.
My issue, I think, was that the coloring was a bit bold here.
Yes.
As opposed to the, you know, more muted tones that I guess I'm kind of used to for that world, I guess.
Right.
You know what it felt like to me? I think I liked the art, but it was like too simplistic by like a tiny measure.
Right.
It was just like there was just like a little or it kind of looks like. It was zoomed in too much. Like all the letters are too big, all the lines.
Well, that's because it's half a page zoomed up to a full page. So
yeah, I know, but I feel like it feels like it was made for this format. I mean, like there's nothing that looks like they had to sort of jigger it. So it was done like this on purpose, but it's just done in sort of this big bold thing, and maybe it's, you know, so the kids or whoever will read it, but it just felt off a little bit in that way. This was almost my pick of the week, though. I mean, I just like I almost made this that sure. I went back and forth on.
I really enjoyed it.
Giant robot attacks Gotham, and then Batman defeats it. But he's investigating where it came from, and then as the course of the investigation, finds out Lex Luthor's involved, and then one of his exes shows up at a cocktail party where he meets Lex, and so there's a lot of elements going on here. And then, of course, as we mentioned, you've got shadowy Jason Todd watching the proceedings. But so
I also kind of like the shade a bit thrown Superman's way in this. That's just like, you know, it's he's clearly off world somewhere. He's not answering anyone's calls, and you know, Bruce tries to make a call to him, and Alfred's just like, you're not going to leave him a message, and he's like, he's not here, Alfred.
Like, I mean, the moment that Lex shows up in this becomes a real comic book, a real story that I was into. I'm actually looking at those pages. It's literally just those two men talking.
Yeah.
And that was the most rapt part, and that's not how it's supposed to work. But that's how good that is.
Well, that's how good dialogue, good character work makes it work. I mean, there's a lot of dialogue. It's like Todd McFarlane in the 90s doing Spawn, you know, balloons, but good dialogue. Notice.
That's the whole point. Yeah.
And you can hear the voice in your head, the Clancy Brown, the terrific Lex Luthor voice. And, it's great. It was great. That scene. And the book was fun. I liked it. I will probably read more of it if they keep putting it out. And we'll see what happens. But I liked it. So that's the patron pick.
Fun.
We got to do ratings on it. Ratings out of 5 stars. I'm giving it a solid 3.75.
I'm going to give it a 4.
I'm going to go 4.
Yeah, I really liked it.
All right. So there you go. Patreon.com/fanboy. Will there be another patron pick? Find out. Tune in next week. Same bat time, same bat channel. Patron powers. We're moving it up on the show. So if you give the $5 or higher level, at the patreon.com/fanboy. You could show them power live on the show. And we thank everyone who does that, by the way. We thank everyone who supports the show in any form, and we'll get to that in a minute. But let's start off, Josh, thanking our first patron.
Oh, well, the first patron here is Len Schmid.
Schmid.
Len Schmid. I always like to pronounce that D in there. Like, you ever made a branded? Brand? That was my wife's last boyfriend before I came along. His name was Brand, and I've been making fun of him for 2 decades. I don't know anything about him. But Len Schmidt. Len Schmidt's power is to not let things go. No. Len Schmidt, no Lego can hide from him.
Mm.
And this comes in handy for several reasons. If you're building a thing and you can't find that piece, for example, if you happen to be putting back together your Star Wars cantina that your son took apart at some point, and you just can't find that one goddamn 8x2 plate anywhere, Len doesn't have that problem. And then also there's no inadvertent stepping on Legos that are unseen.
Mm-hmm.
No Legos can hide from him.
So, but if he knows where the Lego piece is, like, is he going to have to like tear apart his house if it's stuck under a couch somewhere? Or
he can. Okay, do you ever play Assassin's Creed?
Yeah.
Okay. You know when you do the vision, like you send the eagle up or whatever, and you highlight all the people, and then you can see where they all are, even through walls and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
As Legos, they stand out to him.
That's A plus power right there.
He's like the Josie Mac of Legos.
I mean, it's a good power if like he likes Legos, or he's got kids around or whatever. You know, if he's like a single dude with no kids, it doesn't do anything with Lego. It's not. You know, when it would come in handy though, if he was like, you know, they have the little pouches that have the Lego, like you can't tell what's in them, and some of them are worth more money. So he could have a whole job of doing that, just going around buying those things, finding all the rare ones. That would make him an asshole. But I mean,
hey, you do what you got to do.
It's true.
All right.
You have the gift. Use the gift.
All right, Jim, you're up.
All right. Carl Degra?
I think that's an accent on the E that got converted to a weird character in this format. So, Degra?
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 Degra? Carl
Degra?
His power is to be able to turn any pair of shoes, doesn't matter what, into slippers and back again if needed.
We're going to have very similar powers.
Mr. Rogersism.
Yeah, it is he gets home, if he's a household, if he's at a household that, you know, do you need house shoes or house slippers or whatever, sure. he can make them happen with the shoes that he's got on, or shoes that someone else has on, very easy. Or if he just, you know, wants to be a bit more comfortable instead of the work boots he may have worn all day.
I feel like we're in a slippers renaissance right now.
We are. He's very, very handy friend to know.
Normally, I only pull them out for like the holidays when it's cold, a little bit colder. But now I'm like, screw it, slippers.
As a person who is always home, and also who I have some foot problems. Like my feet hurt a lot. I still like shoes. I always wear shoes. It drives my wife crazy. She's like, why are you wearing shoes now? So I'm like, that's what I do. This is a feature. It's not a bug. And then my other question is, who says house shoes? Because I've heard it, but do people still? I feel like that's very old people who say that. But do you say that, or is, I don't know? I'm wondering.
I don't know. I see it on Instagram.
Okay. I bet it's regional. I bet it's like pop.
Chris Kabul. It's a great last name. Chris Kabul can transmute any one food into another food. So, let's say you're stuck at home, and you don't have really access to food, but you got a lot of one kind of food, but you need another kind of food. Chris can change it. If you're cooking and you're missing one ingredient, he can change the, you know, stores of potato chips you've got into cilantro or whatever it is you needed for that recipe.
Oh, all right.
So Chris can transmute whatever one food to another food.
Oh, that's useful. That's very useful. As a person who doesn't like cheese, and then when you tell somebody not to put cheese on something, or there's cheese in something that is not included in the description of the item, leading to like it does. It lists 50 things here, and you didn't say cheese. Oh, it just comes with cheese. That's not okay, but that would help. Because
I feel like once we were on a trip, Josh, and you, we had that, like, you ordered a sandwich and there was cheese on it, but didn't say it, and they were like, "Oh, we just thought you'd want cheese. You're like, I didn't want cheese.
That happens a lot. And like, because I don't always, because I don't like to do the, like, the pre, like, no, this doesn't have cheese on it, right? Because if it doesn't, then they're like, no, it didn't fucking say cheese. But if you don't ask.
You're an asshole either way is the lesson yeah, for your life.
That's the point.
Can I ask a quick question about this power, sure, though?
Yeah.
Does the food have to be the same size?
So it's like the same mass, yeah. So it's not like he can turn like a jelly.
So if he took a Cheerio and wanted a steak,
no, he can't make it
a bunch of Cheerios.
That's the same thing I was going to say. You can't make a Cheerio into like a porterhouse. It could be a tiny Cheerio-sized porterhouse.
But if he had like a cup of Cheerios.
Yeah, it's the same mass. Fine. Yeah.
Okay.
So Len, Carl, and Chris, thanks for being patrons. Patreon.com/iFanboy. And that's where you can go to help the show out directly. We think everyone does that. We talked about it last time. We had realized times are tough and people have already said they've had to scale back. And we have no problem with that. If you need to, do what you, it's important for you and your family first. But at the same time, we had actually had a huge uptick in people joining up, even just at the $1 level after we talked about it last week and how important it was to us. And so, hey, listen, if you're listening to the show and you think you can just afford $1 a month, even though times are tough and jobs are uncertain, then we do appreciate that over at patreon.com/iFanboy, and you get a lot for it. As we mentioned last time, our stretch goal was temporarily hit when we had our eccentric benefactor, who's going to be on next week's show. Spoilers. Spoiler alert. And so we had the Non-Comics Media Podcast unlocked. We did the first episode, and we're going to do another one. We're going to do another one this month because why not? We are stuck here, and we have nothing to do. So we're going to do one more of those. You can look forward to that. Also, the other stretch goal was putting our missing video shows up to our YouTube channel. And I've actually been looking at that channel this week. And we did about, Josh, did about 277-ish episodes. There was a couple of ones we didn't number here and there, like the Darwin Cook one we did at the very end a couple of years later. So we did about 200, let's just say 280 episodes. And there's about 180 through 280 are on the site. So about 100 episodes. But that means 180 of them aren't. So if you're looking for more content from us, get that stretch goal back up, and we will do that for you. Also, exciting news, ifanboy.threadless.com. We added a new shirt design. We told you we would. This was not one we planned, so we came up with this week.
I didn't believe us.
We came up with it this week and executed it within 24 hours of coming up with the idea, and it's now for sale on ifanboy.threadless.com. It's our new design called Stay Home and Read Comics. You can find it on our social media, and it's the message for our times. Stay home. Don't go outside. Stay home. Read your comics. You got enough of them. Read old ones. Read new ones. And you can find that at ifanboy.threadless.com. The news about that is we're going to give a portion of our proceeds, I believe, of 50% of our profits to comic stores in need. We haven't figured out exactly how that's going to happen yet because there's not a central fund for them. But we're going to figure out the best way to disperse those funds. And we're not talking about millions of dollars or thousands of dollars. It's going to be hundreds of dollars. And so we're going to try to do the best we can with that money to help comic stores in need. So you can get a cool shirt, and you can have a cool message, and you can help comic stores in need at ifanboy.threadless.com with a new shirt. Stay home and read comics. And, of course, ifanboy.com/support is how you can help us out via PayPal directly. And ifanboy.com/Amazon is how you can help out by buying books. We talk about the Booksplode or other general things if Amazon is still working in your area, not on strike. And we thank everyone who does that. Help support the show. It is our part-time job, and we do appreciate everyone who helps keep the show going. All right, so now we have a new segment, G.I. Joe Corner, and to help us celebrate the addition of this corner to our room, we've added in our old host, our buddy, our buddy Ron Richards.
It's certainly not Josh Flanagan, if you're talking about buddies. But,
I got like 4 hours of sleep last night.
The first thing you say is that.
Exactly.
Yeah, so I haven't been on this show in years.
So just to give everybody context, the doors to the corners have been locked, and I've been outside silently knocking, and they finally unlocked one for G.I. Joe for me. So it's great to be back. You might hear some babies in the background because I have babies now. So
look, I've done a few of these guest stints before, and I have yet to do one with Ron. So this is
This is great. Yeah, this is a first time for us. Right, excellent.
So we, you know, longtime listeners will know we love G.I. Joe. We love talking about G.I. Joe, and during this weird time, Hasbro released to YouTube their original G.I. Joe episodes, uncut, including the bumpers, although not including the PSAs, unfortunately. So we figured, hey, why not talk about the cartoon? We've always talked about it in the past. Why not rewatch them and actually talk about them one episode at a time? So we're talking about G.I. Joe, Real American Hero, This is The Cobra Strikes, The Mass Device, Part 1, which originally aired September 12th, 1983, directed by Dan Thompson, written by Ron Friedman, who's also the producer for Marvel Productions. Marvel, as anyone who watched How the Toys Are Made, was hired by Hasbro to create the characters and the story that would compel the children to buy the toys, because at the end of the day, just like the comic we talked about, Batman, it's all about buying the toys. So this was...
You do the same thing now. It's just for adults.
Right. So this was first part of, a five-part story. That it was Monday through Friday was the...
They used to do that. They did the daily part, a week's worth of content in the stream, which in cartoons back in the day, they used to be one and dones.
Yeah.
And the fact that these are all sequential was amazing.
Yeah. So this is the first 22 minutes as... we get introduced to all the toys you can buy, all the vehicles in the opening and throughout the episode. And we hang out with the G.I. Joes. And of course, I took notes. And I don't know where they went. So that's just the way it goes. So this was fun, guys. What'd you think?
So I couldn't remember. I don't remember seeing this originally because, Snake Eyes look completely different. And it was
okay, so
early.
That was Snake Eyes, right?
Yes,
it was.
That was the original design for Snake Eyes from the original, the early days of the comic. Was the no gloves and the old visor. I love that design of Snake Eyes.
Me too.
What I love about that is that there's absolutely no context to who he is or why he doesn't talk.
There's no context to anything.
They don't even address him.
Well, so first of all, Jim slightly younger than us, so. Jim, I assume you were too young in 1983 to be watching this cartoon. What is your history with G.I. Joe cartoons? Have you seen them? Have you watched them? Have you read the comic? What is your G.I. Joe fandom?
My G.I. Joe fandom came to, with the, I guess, 3¾ figures, I guess. Mm-hmm. That was like really it. I think my first, this is awful, but my first like real interaction with G.I. Joe was just that awful, awful live action movie. Both of them.
That makes sense for your age. Like,
yeah,
just for like for your context for us, because you don't know. This was every day at 3 or whatever. Yeah,
every day after school, you ran home to watch the next chapter of G.I. Joe. Every kid in my school did it. I mean, in 83. We were a certain age, and
I feel like I must have picked it up later.
It was. I want to say it was like 3:30 or 4 o'clock on Channel 11, Connor. Yeah.
Yes, it was, and I remember even in kindergarten, we had G.I. Joe comics and we had the toys, and we played in the block area with the blocks. We made little bases for them, and then we would talk about the cartoon every day. So this was a major thing for kids our age at the time.
Which brings me to my first note about this show. I was like, this is very violent. I mean, it was like missiles, explosions. Like, I know there's the joke forever that like nobody hits anything and the guns are lasers, not bullets. But those were not fake missiles.
But that was the thing was that, yeah, it was lasers. It was blasters. And all anyone did was fall down. Like it followed once Star Wars did the whole thing where we could shoot people with lasers and show no blood. It feels like everyone's like, well, we can do whatever we want, and you're right. It was lots of explosions,
but it was lasers.
Also,
but there was sound effects of real guns.
Yeah. Yes,
which is surprising to me. It was clearly shooting lasers, but they used machine gun sound effects, which I think they must have gotten rid of really soon later because it wasn't throughout the show.
And also, you just lightly tap on a Cobra hiss tank and it blows up.
Yeah. Or the Star Striker or anything. Liked the fact that it didn't. I know I criticized the comic earlier for this, but it didn't give you any context. And I guess because I knew the context didn't matter to me. But if you're a kid, it's just like, who is Duke? Who is Scarlet? Who is Stalker? Who is Snake Eyes?
I was trying to put my mindset in 1983 watching this and like. First off, you've got a terrorist organization that knows where your base is and is attacking it within the first 5 minutes of the show. Duke, maybe flirt with Scarlet a little less.
I noticed that.
like we were watching it and we were like, whoa, Duke coming on strong, coming in hot.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, so if you don't know, in the comic book at the same time, basically the main character of the comic was Snake Eyes. And in the comics, Snake Eyes and Scarlet were an item. But in 1983... you couldn't have the main character be someone who couldn't speak. So Snake Eyes was... Snake Eyes was relegated to the background. Duke took his spot as the main character and Scarlet's love interest. And so Snake Eyes is just sort of in the back doing cool ninja stuff. in the background, but never really in the foreground all that much in the cartoon. And Duke becomes the main character, the Aryan hero. And but I did like that it was sort of very, it was very focused. I mean, it was basically Duke.
Wow, the Aryan hero, Connor. Well,
think about the early 80s. All the heroes were like blonde. Luke Skywalker, you had one of the Duke brothers. I mean, that was just the thing.
Connor's woke now.
So, but I like that it was focused.
Man, I've been out of it. Connor's woke.
You had Duke and Scarlet and Snake Eyes and Stalker were sort of the main four. And then you had some other ones on the side. You had like, we saw glimpses of like Gung Ho, and it was
Breaker. In there. I like Breaker.
Who was the blonde guy with Breaker?
He's the guy. He had a helmet. That was him with his helmet off. I forget the character's name, but later in the episode, Flash? He had that thick helmet. No, it's not Flash. I don't think it was Flash.
Zap.
It might have been Zap.
Zap was later, I thought.
Because Flash is the tank driver. One. Yeah. No, Zap was original team.
Yeah.
I'm looking at it right now. It was at the 15-minute mark. He's sitting there with Stalker and Breaker. Anyway, it was a relatively focused team. It wasn't sprawling yet. Yeah. And relatively similar to the comics in terms of the lineup.
Can we discuss then that we could literally, this could turn into an hour thing. We just can't. It's funny because you mentioned that his tanks would blow up, but really Cobra has a pretty impressive infrastructure.
Yeah.
They have an underground castle.
Crazy underground castle.
There's a large sports arena of some kind.
Yeah.
There's a lot. I mean, say what you will about the quality of their production, but the sort of scope of what they were able to do and the resources where those came from, that's impressive.
And technology. I mean, they have the ability to grab this satellite, take it over with these discs, and then just transport anything they want to anywhere in the world, including taking Duke away, and now he's the captive in this arena where he's got to fight for the pleasure of the Cobra.
And they also have mind control headbands, which, by the way, this episode solved one of the biggest mysteries I've had about all my years of watching G.I. Joe, because as the years have gone on, the credits would be contained stills from episodes, and Destro's still was the one of him holding that joystick. Mm-hmm. And for years, I never knew where that came from, and now I know. Right. Yeah, so...
Well, we would have been just a little over five when these came out, and I know I'd seen them, but I mean, they would have been into reruns probably by the time that I started watching these. Yeah. And so
I remember because on Channel 11 in New York and WPIX would air G.I. Joe reruns and Transformers on Sunday mornings, because that was the battleground of my epic fight with my parents on I didn't want to go to church because I wanted to watch Transformers, but I could watch G.I. Joe, and then we'd have to leave to go to church and I'd miss Transformers. But that's another thing. But I don't remember being caught up on current episodes until the Sergeant Slaughter. BET,
that's really
not
later.
The BET, but like, yeah, that was years later. That was like 86, right?
Oh, yeah, I was so, before that. Yeah.
That's when memory wise, I remember being like current, like with current episodes. So there were years of reruns that we watched. So.
I don't think I was even aware of which was which, but I think you could kind of tell which one was earlier. The thing that the image from this one that I remembered the best was when he's in the arena and the people have all the mind control bands on. I was like, oh, I remember this, and it was creepy then. And it's
Cobra not a world power?
That's what I was about to say. Considering the resources they have, the money they clearly have for infrastructure and vehicles and all the people, they could easily either bribe their way into power or just roll in instead of their obsession with G.I. Joe, just roll into a small country and take it over.
Right. I got one word for you. Leadership.
Vacuum of
marketing. Right.
So clearly though, you know, in the arena you have the Cobra Commander and Destro sitting on two thrones. This really introduces us to the beginning of the power struggle within the Cobra leadership.
Right. Yes. Yeah. I like the introduction of Destro. That was cool with the robe, and like he's the most flashy arms dealer in the planet. I assume everyone knew that Baroness was the undercover agent
I knew that, but I was watching this with my wife and kids, and when Baroness took off her rubber mask and my wife goes, "Oh, and apparently she just dropped 40 pounds too."
They've got full body masks. It's like Mission Impossible, Tom Cruise.
Oddly enough, my only memory, my other memory of this episode was Major Blood in the pigsty. For some reason, I remember that imagery, which I don't know why I remember that, but still. But Major Blood just runs headlong into a fight no matter what, and no consequences or nothing. They just run at each other constantly.
He's the field leader.
That dude is not afraid of death. even a little bit.
Well, he's got that cool helmet on. Why would you be? So the whole story here is that they've got this device, the mass device, which they've hijacked from G.I. Joe and allows them to transport anything, anywhere. And so we see in the cool, I always forgot about the, like, coming this week on G.I. Joe, we see them transporting their army all around the world. We see them stealing armies. We see them taking the Eiffel Tower. Like, it's going to be a whole big mess that G.I. Joe has to undo as they have the mass device and also save Duke from imprisonment and the mind control device. So,
tell you what, this show, though, great music.
Yes.
Great music.
It moves. The show moves. It moves fast.
Jim is right. The music is great, and Connor right. The speed of the show is great. I can't think of a better representation of the 80s, mm-hmm. right? Just like it was just
it's cocaine just really, everywhere.
Yeah, like, I mean, like guns, explosions, good music. You got you know
Cold War, like icy era.
Redhead.
Yeah.
You know what? The issue was interesting is that it was hand drawn animation. I mean, it was outsourced. You know, the sort of
everything was back then.
Sure, no, I know, but that was the point. It wasn't like the Disney stuff where they were all sitting around doing it. But really, I don't see hand drawn animation all that much anymore. And now it looks so antiquated, not in a bad way. It doesn't look worse. It's just like, all right, this is how things work. But the matte paintings in this are amazing.
Yeah,
like the backgrounds, and I was like, those are wonderful pieces of art. And I know I saw Russ Heath's name in the credits as a vehicle designer or character designer.
He was a character designer.
Which is awesome. And you know, like comic people, this was related to comics.
Marvel made it. It was Marvel's thing. I mean, they did the comic and the show. They created the mythology, the story of the, I mean, that Hasbro created the look and feel of the characters, the actual toys, and Marvel did the rest. So it's a very much a comic thing. Whenever we'd cover G.I. Joe, people would say, "Why are you covering it?" It's basically a Marvel property, mm-hmm. Despite the fact that it's owned by Hasbro. So that's episode one, the mass device, and YouTube just jumped me to part two, and I should feel like I want to watch right now, but I'm going
to
pause it.
It's very hard not to get sucked into it. I will agree. Like I know it's a setting in YouTube that you can turn off autoplay with the next one. I just haven't done it yet, and so I'm constantly in the fight with my remote control and my Android TV to keep it from playing the next video. So it's a fun game I like to play. So, you know.
So we're going to come back as we go through this weird time to cover the rest of the mass device story and see where we go from there. So that was Cobra Strikes, the Mass Device Part 1 from G.I. Joe Real American Hero. That was G.I. Joe Corner. Thanks, Ron, for joining us.
My pleasure. And before I go, I know you guys have been probably talking about what's going on in comic books and stuff like that. I just want to remind everybody, go to Marvel.com. We have a list of comic book stores there that you can support. Please support your local comic retailer. Thank you. I miss you guys. I miss
Jim. I told my comic shop guy, I said, make sure you sign up for that. And he's like, I'll get to it. And then yesterday he told me that he did, and he's already gotten a $100 gift certificate sale out of it that he
awesome. Yeah, totally. Yeah. Yeah. So we're just trying to do our part in spreading the word about local comic shops. And thanks to everybody who's helping local comic shops. And it's a tough time. So we're doing everyone doing what they can.
All right. Well, so Ron will be back soon to talk about more. Yeah. Joe.
Sign me up. I'm ready to watch every episode.
All right. So as we just talked about, it's a weird time in comics. We've been alluding to this the whole time. Obviously, you know, you're listening to the show. You understand what's happening. I wrote down a loose timeline, and you guys can correct me if I'm wrong about how this has gone the last couple of weeks, and we can discuss. So basically, once the virus started spreading, states around the United States and other countries around the world started shutting down non-essential businesses, which meant that comic stores started closing. And eventually, the majority of comic stores, I think in the U.S., were closed. At least the stores that were serving the majority of the population had closed. Mm-hmm. And so without anywhere to ship its product, Diamond announced they were not delivering any new comics to stores, which led to a domino effect of, at first, most of the smaller companies announcing they would not have new comics, and they wouldn't distribute them digitally even. And then DC first announced they would distribute their books digitally, and then within 24 hours flip-flopped to saying they wouldn't. And then Marvel announced they wouldn't do digital comics either for now. And then Diamond announced they were stopping payment to vendors. And then we had this weird thing happen where this product called Comics Hub announced they were going to save the day by allowing you to get comics digitally as a pre-order from stores, so you could get the digital book to read it now, but eventually you'd get the book when it came out and the payment would go to the stores. And then within 24 hours, that was dead. So I think that's where we are now, right? There are no physical books. No physical books. And for now, No digital books, nothing even to Comixology. And away we go. We have, I did some light Googling, and it looks like we've had at least 4 stores closing permanently since this has happened in the last couple of weeks. And we assume there'll be more to follow, because comic stores run on extremely razor-thin budgets, as most small businesses do, but comic stores really month-to-month razor-thin budgets. So that is where we are. And Jim is as deep in the industry as we used to be. What do you make of everything?
It's really interesting. I think a lot of the... like Diamond, when they first made their announcement, it's a really weird announcement, because they said, we're not taking any new books, but we will still deliver the stuff that we have in our warehouse. So please, for the love of God, empty our warehouse, which to me is came off a little weird, in the sense that, like,
everything must go.
Yeah. Well, but also, like, if I think they could have gone another week before doing it. But I think the biggest problem and why they said they couldn't is because of the weird cash flow issue that Diamond inevitably always finds itself in. Right. And I think that was the biggest reason to, you know, initially stop saying we're not sending anything new out, because the product wouldn't make it to the majority of the stores. And the product that would make it out, that money would not be nearly enough to continue making the payments that they need to keep the distribution going. DC was the strangest,
radio silence from them until they
were silent until they made an announcement on a Saturday in a DC retailer Facebook group that then, you know, they, you know, put their statement out via the media afterwards. But for them, you know, they were like, you know, yes, you know, no new books are shipping, but you should be able to get some digital books coming up. And obviously retailers were not happy about that, because in their eyes, sending, you know, customers to there's a this mentality that if you, you know, send a customer to digital, they will probably not come back for print. And there's various arguments kind of for and against all of that. I don't believe
they're different.
I think they're different. I think, you know, a digital reader has become a digital reader, and I think the growth in that section is much, much slower than really anything else, right? And
it plateaued really soon, around 10% really total revenue.
If there was going to be that cannibalization, we would have seen it way more already. And you just haven't seen that. And so
we see in our readership, I mean, like, or our listenership, like, the vast majority still buy comics in physical form. And I think some of that will have to go to the fact that, you know, they refuse to sell digital comics at a lower price, which is a protection against comic shops, which I understand. Comic shops are necessary, absolutely. But it doesn't give a true picture of sort of what those people are. But because of that, because, well, I'm going to spend $4, I may as well have the issue.
Yeah.
And you're right. That hasn't changed. That seems to have plateaued. So they're different markets.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, they could change if they,
I mean, Josh and I are Comixology customers. I've been a Comixology customer for like 7 years. I haven't bought a book in a comic store other than Mr. Miracle, comic store exclusive hardcover. I haven't bought something from the comic store in 7 or 8 years. We got an email here from Rashad B. We got a lot of emails, a lot of panicked, sad, worried, scared emails, and we're going to try to pepper them in this discussion. Rashad B. wrote in and said, what is your opinion of the comic book industry refusing to sell digital comics because they can't sell physical? The excuse is that they'll help your local comic store and stay in business, and I'm sure it can't hurt, but unless Marvel, DC, whoever aren't actually paying the rent and utilities for comic stores during the lockdown, then the store's going to close anyway. Now the tiny bit of digital fan base you had might not be there because you told them you don't want their money. These guys and gals are going to buy something else digital, be it movies or video games, and may not come back. And your print fans would rather read and are glad digital. There's a whole bit about sticking it to physical readers, so it's not important. It's like telling your kid you can't get a driver's license because your neighbor's car broke down, even though you weren't using his car for the test anyway. So basically, there's an angry digital reader who is upset that because he is not a comic store customer, he can't he can't be serviced either. And I'm a little bit on Rashad's side. I mean, I know a lot of retailers, and there are a lot of good ones, and I'm not advocating retailers shut down, but at the same time, I'm not a retail customer.
But I think the biggest thing here is that comic book piracy is so rampant that
and vast
that if you put those books out digitally, even like, sure, there's going to be the audience that's going to buy those books, but I would say, you know, not, this is not to demonize print fans, but I would say that if someone wanted to read the story, or for whatever reason, they'll find a different way.
But isn't that true anyway? Any Wednesday, like they could get the book.
Sure, but I think it's more like if you put the digital file out there, I would say it potentially drives that demand up a bit more, because,
well, to me the reason why people are remaining physical customers for the most part, and this is certainly not everybody, is that they want the product for their collection,
right? The collectibility
aspect. So I don't really see a vast majority of print readers staying with digital and then never going back and getting the issue when they can, because they have their long box with their 50 issues in a row of Batman, and they want to keep it going. Mm-hmm. But I don't see them skipping issue over four issues because they already read them digitally. That's what I'm saying.
But there's also the aspect too, though, of like keeping up with the story and the entertainment, right? And so, right, you know, spoilers are a very real thing. And so if they're out digitally and they, you know, you're a print reader and you want to experience the story that way, are you going to have to go into a social media black hole to try and avoid that stuff? So like, you know, I don't know. I see it on both sides, but I believe, I think the piracy is probably the biggest roadblock for publishers to say, okay, let's go ahead, because the money I imagine they make on that wouldn't make a difference. And so why screw one larger, bigger audience, even if it's a perceived, you know, screwing?
I mean, that is a point to you know, if the total market for digital is almost inconsequential, say it's 10%, yeah, you know, and you've got Amazon taking a big bite out of that, you know.
It's not, however, it's still $100 million. And for companies looking for revenue, it seems strange.
But that doesn't offset the overhead of having to have all that stuff produced. Even if it's $100 million of your costs, there's no way that their costs are one-tenth. They don't have a 90% margin on these things, so they wouldn't be able to pay to have those things produced to get a 10% of the revenue they were expecting.
Right.
But the other thing is this. At the end of the day, if comic book shops come back online, they start shipping, and they start going out physically, are comic shops going to be able to sell all that back stuff? This is actually a anti-digital. pro-anti. If all of this stuff had been coming out digitally this whole time, and then when the comic shops open back up, and then there's a backlog of stuff, and people aren't going to be able to buy all that stuff, and that could make people drop off. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, well, but I think they're going to have to do what the movie industry's been doing, right? They're just going to have to shift the schedule.
Yes.
I think they're going to have to, like, you know, what Marvel was going to have Empire start, I guess, and this week.
DC had whatever they were going to do. It was all carefully planned and plotted to match up with anniversaries and things. And that's all going to get blown to hell.
Yeah. And so, like, they're just going to have to resume the schedule from where it left off, as opposed to, because at the same time, like, there are a number of printers that are shut down.
DC's printer shut down.
Yeah, so they can't make the books. I mean, they can still produce the books and get ahead, and so, you know, you will likely not have a late book for a while.
To be fair, also, like, I work in printing, and there's a lot of printers open. Printers are often in the U.S. are categorized as essential. There's ways to do it, but they don't always print everything in the same place.
Well, the single issues are printed in Canada, and the trades in China. So happening in those countries is different than what's happening in America in terms of printers. Right.
I think, trades are obviously a lot easier, you know, for the publishers to produce. I think it's the comics getting the, you know, they all have A+ pricing right now, as far as, you know, printing comics and stuff goes. And so even if they look for alternatives, I don't know if they're going to necessarily get that and if it makes sense for their margins. Mm.
So I think one of the things that happened when this first announced was that, you know, the expected reaction was, oh shit, the comics industry is about to go out of business. And I don't think that's the case.
Yeah.
But do we think it's going to be, and this is all we should mention, wild speculation. Yep. No one knows what's going to happen. But considering the precarious financial nature of much of the industry, do we think it's going to be changed, or it'll just be that we go back to business as usual once we get things settled out?
I want to believe that there will be things that come out of this that will change the industry. Right. You know, in an ideal world, it would change it for good. I think a lot of what we are learning now is, you know, the big apparent holes and issues with Diamond as the sole distributor of comics.
I was trying to think of a way to say this the other day. It didn't sound terrible, but the fact is, anybody who knows anything has been saying for years that this model is unsustainable.
Yep. Or precarious. If something like this would happen,
right?
This would be
right. And this, it's just proving that out.
Yeah.
And I don't, you know, I think the real problem is that, you know, nobody knows what the solution would be. Like, yes, you're right. This doesn't work. This has problems. Well, what do you do? No idea. I don't know that there's a solution for it. So that is, but
I think there is a world in a future where, look, so much of the, I guess wealth of the industry is tied up in maybe five retailers. Yeah. Right. And I think there is a future where you can have, Midtown Comics has always been incredibly smart in how they handle their business. Same with DCBS. I could see that those two already have such robust subscription plans and whatever that if Midtown got another, you know, a warehouse or two and really wanted to expand their operation,
right?
I can see a future where like Midtown and DCBS or, you know, even Lone Star are getting into that game where it's, you know, you break up the Diamond of it all and you have options to get your comics.
And we're talking only about the single issues, because there are options for stores to get trades from places other than Diamond, and many of the smart ones use those options.
Yeah, Ingram and Penguin Random House, Hachette. Like, there are still plenty of other distributors for, you know, like collected editions and things like that. And I think this may be the opportunity where some of them, if they can make the numbers work right, really step in and take a bite out of the hold that Diamond's got on it. And I know there already are some retailers who use some of them. And so I think this is a real sort of make or break kind of moment. If the publishers and, you know, some of the smarter retailers can figure out a way to diversify the distribution of comics. But what's going to happen is it's going to need to be an effort where Marvel and DC and Image and some of the other top publishers all come together and say, yeah, we'll commit to this. Because it's going to take all of them to commit.
Nothing happens without Marvel, DC, and Image getting involved, as we saw this week with Comics
Out. Right, but I don't think Marvel can go out and do it on its own. Marvel.
Well, they potentially have that's why we're in this mess in the first place.
Yeah, I think Marvel has the hubris to try again, but I think they know at this point that like this is going to have to be a Marvel, and everything that I've heard and been told is that, like, you know, no one is ready to abandon Diamond yet, but I think people are looking to find ways where Diamond is not the only solution.
Yeah, I mean, and I think the thing that isn't so, I mean, like, I love the way that you said that. I think Marvel has the hubris to try it again, but the reality is that, like, Marvel and DC both need comic shops, and comic shops need both Marvel and DC.
Yep.
So while they are rivals, they are symbiotic. Like, they need each other to be successful. Mm-hmm. You know, each one of them wants to be number one, but, you know, and they need Image to a certain extent.
If either one of those companies somehow collapse, the industry collapses. You can't have comic stores losing 30-40% of their revenue.
Yeah.
It'd be worse than this. There's an email from Andrew from Spain who says, considering the Diamond has halted distribution, do you think COVID-19 will collapse the sale of physical comics for years to come? If the Diamond shutdown can cause the permanent closure of enough LCSs, could that cause Diamond to go bankrupt after losing that business? Without another distribution company, the whole system is sensitive to collapse. Do you think the profit margins are thin enough for this to be a possibility? Is there a death spiral for the industry if enough stores go out of business? Because this could last 3-4 months.
I don't think so. I think it really comes down to the point where so much of the money is tied into 5 or 6 truly mega retailers.
Yeah, sure.
That as
people,
long
and people
as,
may not know that there's yeah, basically 5 stores in the U.S. that buy most of the comics from Diamond.
Yep.
The other ones are
small. It's Lone Star. It's DCBS.
Still Mile High.
Mile High, I think, is probably on that list.
But still, like, your local comic shops could be changed drastically. And I think that what will happen is you will see a lot of the smaller shops and even the mid-sized ones, the ones who are really good, although people who have diversified, you know, people who have, like, a gaming or a Pokemon section or whatever that make, you know, magic cards or whatever it is, they might do okay. And those are traditionally the most successful shops anyway, whereas the comics are just a part of it. But a lot of those are going to go under, and I'm guessing eventually new shops will replace them. This has happened before.
Well, and that's what I think is probably going to happen. It is going to be sad to see a lot of the smaller stores.
And no one wants a single store to go to business.
Right. No, absolutely not. But I think what will happen is that, you know, whatever shakes out from all this, I'm sure plans will be put into place to make it more appealing for new shops to open. I can tell you, like, the Diamond rolled out a new store initiative just a couple years ago, and a buddy of mine opened up a shop in the town that I live in Tennessee, and you know, it was a store that thrived. There was only one, maybe two other shops in town. But he came in at the right time, took advantage of all those opportunities, and was able to really build and he diversified the business, of course, but like really build a solid store. And so it, you know, for him, it sucks that he's going to have to close for right now, which seems like only a couple of weeks, but maybe a month or two, has diversified his stuff enough. And, you know, obviously, had enough to, you know, that he's able to float a month or two, but still at the same, at the end of the day, it's initiatives like that that I think will also, you know, bring new potential retailers or you know, to the table.
I think it's important to realize that this is me trying to be optimistic maybe, but there is an upside to this, in a way, because it is not a healthy system. It hasn't been for a long time. So, you know, whenever you force change on people, that hurts a lot of people inadvertently. There's collateral damage. There's things like, you know, and if it's going to happen anyway, then it would be a really interesting time if we, you know, saw systemic improvements, if we saw other options, if we saw innovation, if we saw, you know, hopefully that helps.
And the problem that is me is the cynical side is that every time we try to see that, there's a group of retailers who get together and smash it down.
That's true. I will say, and this is probably a hot take, but I do not believe Comics Pro is healthy for the industry one bit. There are some good retailers in that group, but I think as a whole, when you have a selection of retailers trying to mandate and direct the industry in a way that may not be the best for everyone, you get yourself into a lot of trouble there.
I feel like a lot of and I mostly know that in terms of sort of the opposition to digital, which I understand, because I think that they look at, like, if you were looking at music the same way, then they see comics like CDs.
Yeah.
And therefore digital come along and destroy CDs.
They should look at it like vinyl.
That's what I was about to say. I see comics like vinyl. Because, you know, your market, your customer base, they want those records to hold. They want those comics mm-hmm. to hold. The market to those people, not the people who want the content on them necessarily, or you want the crossover of that in that Venn diagram.
There is a lesson to look at the rise in vinyl and how if you treat mm-hmm. it correctly and you treat comics that way, you can not lose the collector customer. In fact, you can grow that base while you can convert people who maybe are reading on their iPad who want that artifact. But I mean, the problem is, and I get it, it's their own livelihood that they're defending, but mm-hmm. anytime that any kind of new solution is brought up, it gets cudgeled into the dirt by a group of retailers. And it's not every retailer, and I don't want to come off as anti-retailer here because I'm a digital customer, but it just happens over and over and over again, and that's part of the reason why the comics industry still looks like it does from the 70s.
Yeah, it blows my mind that there isn't really a easy plug and play point of sale system that is widely adopted, that is not that hasn't, you know, truly been rolled out. I know a lot of that needs to come from, it probably needs to be subsidized from the publishers in a certain form or fashion, but that kind of blows my mind.
My instinct is always that the profit margins are relatively thin for some parts of it, and then for others they just don't care to invest in it.
Yeah.
Or, you know, that nobody's willing to take the risk or make the investment because the chances of it actually paying back, like, it would be awesome to have, but it might be the expense is just too much to bear for anyone.
Yeah, I just remember hearing stories about, like, there was a point in, you know, I think it was two or so decades ago, like, Marvel subsidized cash registers
right
for retailers. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, to me, this just feels like that next step.
Yeah.
I thought since Jim was here, who used to work at Marvel, this would be a good question to answer about the actual creation of the books. Tony B. from San Diego, California. As I've been watching news that TV shows and movies are shuttering production for now, it occurs to me that our favorite medium might be ideally suited for that age of social distancing. I may be mistaken, but I have the impression that most of the creative work is done by solitary writer and artist, and that a lot of the collaboration is done long distance. Is this true? Also, I'm quite happy that my second favorite medium, podcasting, also lends itself to our current situation. I've been thinking about this for 3 weeks.
your second favorite medium of comic podcasting also lends itself to barely being sustainable economically, and it's a hobby, so that's helpful. But if you had any way to,
it's a lot of parallels.
yeah, that's a good point.
So yes, comics, the actual creation of comics, there's no Marvel bullpen. They're done in their own houses, and they're done remotely by lonely solitary comic creators who are now having breakdowns on Instagram. although Rick Remender doesn't make comics anymore. But from a production side, can the actual comic be put together and released remotely?
Oh, for sure.
Production of comics does not require an office in any way.
Does not. Not even a little bit. You can do everything that you need to from home.
All the way up the chain.
Yeah. Because a lot of it is just passing files along, right? Right. Like, I think we've gotten fairly far away from the days where pencilers would mail their pages in to go to an inker and then, you know, come back or whatever. Like, I think so a lot of that is either done digitally at this point with a lot of modern artists, or are, you know, pencils are being scanned in, sent to an inker, inkers are inking them, scanning them up, and then it goes to, you know, a colorist, and the rest goes on. I think the biggest thing that we'll see is, are there books that are lower down the line, or they're down, really more down the sales food chain, that will those continue? Does it make sense to make another issue of
consolidate the line a bit?
Right. Does it make sense? For, like, you know, book X, that's number, you know, 499 on the top 500 list. If it's, you know, number three of a 5-part miniseries, that may not finish. But everything, yeah, I mean, all the top books and all the, everyone is still working. You know, editors at both the big two publishers are all working, you know, they're working from home. They send notes the same way they did when they were sitting in their office. So that comics will still be made. It's just a matter of when can we get them.
You know, what's interesting is that, I mean, I'm seeing this in some businesses as well, you know, doing this thing, it's really going to make people rethink the need to have offices.
Yes.
Well, you're an introvert and don't like going into office, so I think that would be a horrible detriment to the American psyche, or the human psyche, if everyone worked from home from now on.
No, there is absolutely an importance to some form of that, and certainly, Connor, you know this, because we used to work for a company sort of remotely, worked for a company that was in England, and there's a huge strength to going to know those people and see them physically and actually recognize them as real people, as opposed to people just on the other side of an email. But the same format of constantly having everybody, you know, in the same place, and the huge cost of that, the infrastructure that, you know, that's killing your margins, that idea of that could shift. And maybe it's just a little bit, but if they're shaving off some of their fixed costs, then that changes the game a little bit.
Something sort of similar to what, or the counterpoint to what Jim said about marginal books. Couldn't this be an interesting time to release those marginal books that maybe don't have a huge audience to people who are desperate for comics?
Good point.
Maybe. I mean, I think a lot of
at least this is an experiment, right? To see if people would buy.
Yeah, I mean, I think like Valiant, I believe, is putting out a large number of old number ones, you know, making them available for free.
So is Dark Horse.
I think Marvel just made Unlimited, their Marvel Unlimited thing for free for a little bit.
I mean, probably not. My feeling is people are stuck in their ways no matter what. But it's an experiment to see if someone's going to buy Amethyst, if that's the only DC book out there, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Probably not, because the comics industry is stuck in its ways in terms of readership. So who knows?
Yeah.
Is there any other issues before we wrap this up, or where do we see? I mean, so we don't think the comics industry is going to collapse. We don't think it's going to go out of business.
I think we are just in a sit and wait.
Don't think it's going to go all trades, even though that'd be much better.
No. Yeah. And AT&T is not going to, you know, shut down DC Comics, and Disney's not going to shut down Marvel Publishing because of this. Like those are real fears that, you know, I think I see people out there talking about. Like, that's not going to happen.
They make a shit ton of revenue.
Yeah. I mean, it's still a lot of people like to, you find a lot of like movie fans try and minimize the impact that the publishing divisions at both of the big two have on the global, you know, the larger global conglomerate that they're a part of. It's still very important. It's still a lot of money that is being made, because so much of all of that feeds into so many other lines of business. Like we just talked about, DC is releasing a line of figures that are based off, you know, the animated series, but they're like, they've made a comic about that to sort of go with that. Right. And so
comics feeds licensing. Shows, feeds movies, feeds consumer products. That's where their real money is made. Like, yo,
right. Also, like, there's nothing else about the history of comics that is true, is that the comics industry has been able to squeeze every drop of juice from every stone they've ever had. They're incredible at that. Back to Victor Fox in the 30s, you know, to however Marvel does things now. It's amazing.
Yep. Yeah. So comics will be fine. Comics will be different, yes. But comics will be fine.
And I think what I was saying was like, different may not necessarily be bad. In some ways, I'm sure it will be. In other ways, it will be better.
Yep.
Or at least there's an opportunity for it.
Let's wrap this up with one more email from Chris. Chris writes in and says, this is just a very brief note to thank you for the podcast, both in our shared current crisis and for all the previous years of entertainment. I started listening around episode 40-something, so it feels like you have accompanied me on many, many commutes and other car journeys over the last, I'm going to guess about 15 years. I work as a family doctor over here in the UK. It was an eerie work week in the past week, and I suspect that things are going to get a lot scarier in the coming months. So I will be looking forward to iFanboy as a brief moment of fun and normalcy in the week, regardless of whether you are able to talk about comics or not. I wholeheartedly endorse your message of isolation and hand washing. And if you want to alter my patron power to generates unlimited alcohol-based sanitizer from the palms of his hands, I could really use that right now. Come to think of it, after all the con cruds you've experienced over the years, it's surprising this hasn't already been a power. As you appear to be winding down on the patron powers now, if you feel that the patrons or the wider iFanboys would get any pleasure in these dark days from seeing your years of patron powers creativity on one spreadsheet, I have no objections if you would like to make it publicly visible. It has been an honor to contribute a small service to iFanboy by completing this spreadsheet week by week. As a small token of thanks to you guys for producing a show that has meant a lot to me over the years, wishing you, your families, and listeners safety and good health in the coming weeks. So this is from Chris Lewis, who is our patron, who maintains our weekly spreadsheet of patron powers free of charge.
Hold on. I didn't realize that we had a doctor doing this.
I didn't either. I had no idea.
I feel bad now.
Especially now, because he's still been doing it. So first of all, we're not close to being done with the patron powers. There's still quite a few. In fact, as we mentioned earlier, we got an influx of new patrons. So we're not like going to be done next week or anything. But Josh, I think we should take an executive vote and change his patron power to what he wanted, which was to generate unlimited alcohol-based sanitizer from his hands.
I love the specificity of it being alcohol-based. I just appreciate the science behind that. And two, I would offer a blanket I would offer a blanket change of powers to anyone who is working in the medical field. Yeah. Want to write back in? We'll give you a new power. Or grocery store workers. Those are the two that I'm willing to. You come back to me. Maybe UPS guys.
So thanks to Chris and all the doctors who. It's a cliche to say, but they're the superheroes right now. I have one.
You can have both. You can keep your old power too.
Yeah, you get two. I have one in my family who is currently working grueling hospital shifts, and they are incredible. As we said before, as Chris just mentioned, wash your hands, wash your hands, wash your hands. Stay safe and healthy. And thanks for writing in, Chris. And I think we probably will make that spreadsheet eventually available for everyone to see. I've just been enjoying it on a personal level because people don't know this. He also adds his own little snarky commentary to our choices, so that's fun. So,
and that wasn't okay till I found out it was a doctor. Now it's like, go on, sir.
Whatever brings you enjoyment, and if making fun of our choices works for you, that's fine.
All I hear is, oh, it's a real adult. Okay.
I feel smaller now. So, all right. So thanks to everyone who wrote us in. We just answered a couple of emails we got, but we got a ton of people panicking, and we obviously, hopefully we touched upon it in this long ranging discussion, but there will be comics eventually again. In the meantime, you're going to get a lot of nonsense on the show, but you can keep writing us in at contact@ifanboy.com, and we will be looking for emails to fill the show time. So this is a good time to ask your questions. We have a ton of backlog we're going to try to make our way through, but if you have new questions, we appreciate those too. contact@ifanboy.com. Let's wrap the show up.
Please. There's a Books Bloat available for you to listen to. Robin Year One, Chuck Dixon and Javier Pulido with some Marcos Martin on that 20-year-old book on Robin's first year. An Animation Brain Trust episode just came out, Superman Red Sun. I believe people have been waiting for that for a while, and now it is available for you to listen to and enjoy.
We recorded it 2 weeks ago, I think, before we recorded it before it all went to real hell.
Yeah.
So it's
so there probably aren't as many wash your hands edicts in that one, but it's still true. We might edit those in. We might go back and make a special edition of that one. I will tell you, I have a Talksplode booked for next week. If I'm not exactly sure when I will put it out, but it will be soon after that. So there's another one coming up. And as you know, I won't tell. I flirted with telling you who it is, you know, just because times are weird, but I don't want to break the streak. So another one of those is coming up. Connor, we get patron hangouts.
Yeah, so one of the benefits is we do a monthly patron hangout with the patrons. We get on the video for an hour and make dumb jokes and have a good time. But last month we opened it up to the general audience because everyone's stuck inside, and that seemed to work pretty well. So we're going to do it again for the next hangout. And once again, we're not going to make this permanent, but while everyone's stuck inside, we think it's a good thing to get everyone's sense of community. So April 11th, which is a Saturday, which is next Saturday at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern, we're going to have our next patron hangout for everyone. So hopefully you can come and join in the fun. There'll be a post about it on the patron page. There'll be a post about it on ifanboy.com. We'll post about it on our social media channels, but hopefully you can come and enjoy. So an hour or so of nonsense. Maybe we'll, like last time, we'll start it a little bit earlier than the official time, so you can hang out for longer. And also, as we mentioned earlier, the Media Splode show, we're going to do another one of those just because it's fun. And we don't know how long we'll keep doing that show, but we can do at least one more. So that's what we can look forward to coming soon this month.
Jim, what do you got going on in your world, what with no news?
Well, over at Comic Book, I mean, look, we've, you know, obviously we are still covering the impacts of all of this on the various industries that we cover, movies, TV, and comics. We've been doing over the last 2 weeks these hashtag quarantine watch parties, where basically we've picked a movie each night over the last 2 weeks to just kind of watch together on Twitter. Well, we all press play at 9 o'clock Eastern, and it's been a lot of fun because we've had, like, we did Doctor Strange and Scott Derrickson joined along. We did Shazam two nights ago with David F. Sandberg, and which was a lot of fun. We had Kathy Yan for Birds of Prey and David Wilson for Bloodshot. It's been a lot of fun to just kill an hour or two watching a movie, you know,
we're
with
just
friends.
Trying to fill the hours now, Jim. That's the yeah. name of the game.
So, you know, if that seems like something you're interested in or into, you can, you know, just follow Comic Book on Twitter. And that's really all the info that you need.
Jim, who's in bigger trouble, the comic stores or the movie theaters?
The movie theaters, for sure. There's more money at stake there because it's got bigger implications on the rest of entertainment.
Yeah. All right. So head over to fanboy.com. Well, thanks for coming on, Jim. First, comicbook.com is Jim's site where he's the comic book mogul. You can head over there.
Maven.
The Maven is at Marvel. Now he's a mogul.
Oh, I see.
Head over to fanboy.com to find all of our podcasts. You can find a special edition show, Superman Red Sun, right behind this one. You can find the Booksplode, the Robin Year One. You can find years of content, including years of video content as well. You can find out where the pick of the week is before the show comes out by liking facebook.com/ifanboy, following ifanboy on Twitter, or following ifanboy comics on Instagram, where we used to do the best of the weekend panels. And that's Josh.
There was a good panel this week. There was like one.
You should have posted it. I didn't even find one.
That's a joke.
Josh said earlier, well, there'll still be a pick of the week. What that is every week, we'll find out. You'll find out.
You've got to pick something.
Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. Yeah, so there you go. Follow us individually. I'm C.S. Kilpatrick on Instagram. Josh is J.A. Flanagan on Twitter and Instagram. And Jim is Jim Viscardi, V-I-S-C-A-R-D-I, on Twitter and Instagram.
That's it.
If you like this shit, don't worry about the review right now.
Yeah.
Don't worry about the star rating and review. That's this is in the you know, if you want to, that's great. If you're like, what do I do on the internet next? Haven't done that? Go for it. That's fine. If the show is giving you solace or making you happy or do whatever, just listen to it. That's all that you need to do. If you think it might help somebody else, you can let them know about it. Just do whatever you need to do. We always like the last line, I don't think I ever actually read it, but it says help spread the iFanboy love. But what that means is what we're trying to do is make ourselves feel better. And if we make other people feel better at the same time, that it means a lot to us because I can't help by helping people at the hospital. But, you know, every time one of you guys let us know that we've helped you feel better for even a little while, it means everything to me and Connor. I know that much. And so thanks. Do that.
Spread the iFanboy love, but nothing else.
Yeah, literally. So there you go. Jim, it was a lot of fun to have you on. When I opened up Skype, I saw it was more than a year, and I was like, oh, man, that sucks.
It didn't feel like that. It surely we have done one in between.
Well, you did the one with Ryan.
I did one with Ryan. That's true. I did do one with Ryan.
And to be fair, time is a rocket ship right now. I just a child?
We can have you on again because, again, we don't know what we're doing going forward. So maybe we'll have special guests on more often than we usually do.
I will always answer the call.
So thanks, Jim. I am Connor.
And I'm Josh. Wash your hands.
Wash your hands.
Stay in. Don't stay the hell in.
stay home, read comics.